welcome to Questioning War, Organizing Resistance. This is September 15th. I think it's the 15th. Just several days after the 7th anniversary of the attacks of 9/11, and this is a 9/11 Truth Show with Michael Maxwell. And joining us in the second hour will be Bob Bowman, who is a lieutenant colonel, retired, who has been speaking out for many years on 9/11 and other topics. He was in charge of the Star Wars program many, many presidents ago. And when he realized that the whole Star Wars program was a offensive rather than a defensive weapon, then he quit his job and started educating the public and speaking out against it and working for the peaceful uses of space. And so we're really honored to have Bob joining us this hour. We are also speaking with Michael Maxwell, and Michael also has some inner knowledge, too, of how the Defense Department and the White House works. And Michael was just mentioning, too, that you also spent some time in the World Trade Center, and do you want to say something about
that?
Well,
yes, I wanted to add, and Bob, welcome. Glad to have you join us, sir.
He's not quite with us yet, though.
Oh, okay. Let me fill in then with
soon.
Yes. I interestingly enough, I had meals as well as some business meetings, but I had meals numerous times, including at least three occasions brunch on bright sunshiny Sunday morning in the restaurant that was on the top of one of the World Trade Center buildings, called the Top of the World, appropriately enough, and. On two of the brunches or more, I requested to sit at the table nearest the outside window of the restaurant, which also rotated, like many restaurants do at the top of something. So the outer several tables rotated all the way around 360 degrees in approximately an hour and a half. And I recall the building swaying, which was normal. It was designed to sway from the wind because it was 107 floors. And, in fact, it was designed to tolerate a 14-foot sway, which would require a 140-mile-an-hour wind consistently on it for an hour or more, they anticipated, or calculated, blowing in from the Atlantic. And they had never had a sway, as I recall the manager telling me, more than 9 feet measured in the then 28-year history or so of the building. And I calculated using a knife blade as a table edge, looking at the Chrysler Building, that we were swaying that particular Sunday morning 8 feet and something, and the manager told me that the indicators had said that when I was leaving the restaurant later. I mention that because there was, even though you were swaying and moving, there was a great deal of stability that was very clear, and of course the building, you could sense sitting at the outer edges as I did, that it was like being on the branch of a tree limb. The outer part of a tree limb branch, and that the trunk of the tree was supporting the branch quite capably. So the shafts in the center of the building, I believe there were 47, all clearly were like the trunk of a oak tree or redwood. And again, I know something about airplanes hitting things, and the 757. Isn't that much more than a 707 that that building was designed to tolerate. And my experience is, in also seeing that airplane at close up and riding in them, that the building was quite capable of supporting that impact and not descending as it did, pancaking. And that's especially even more so in the second building, where the airplane only sliced into the side of the building. And the second building shouldn't have fallen either, but certainly less so than the first one.
Yes. Well, Bob has joined us now,
oh,
so
good.
I'd like to welcome Bob to the show. And I would also like to ask you, Bob, being an old Air Force interceptor pilot, what do you think happened with the chain of command on 9/11? From all the research that you've done and from your own personal experience, what do you think was going on that day?
Well, my guess is that the chain of command was completely severed there was an order given out less than 2 months before 9/11, which said that any request for intercept has to be personally approved by the Secretary of Defense. This was a revolutionary change in procedure, and one which required that Rumsfeld only had to be, you know, out of touch in the men's room or someplace, there was a stand down. That was one thing. The other thing is that typically errant airliners, those who are off course or have lost voice communication or lost their IFF, their transponder, typically are intercepted within about 15, 60 minutes. And for four hijacked airliners that went off course, lost voice communication, lost their transponder, to fly around for an hour and 40 minutes without being intercepted is just completely ludicrous and impossible unless our air defense system was deliberately sabotaged.
Okay, now Robin Horton says that that happened in June of 2000. It was like, okay, in June of 2000, there were no more quick intercepts. Everything was just slowed down. Yeah, 2001, June 2001. So there were no quick scrambles until the day after 9/11 when it went back to normal operating procedures. But
that's
during
right.
that window, it was like they waited order. Until the attacks were successful before putting the Air Force back on call.
Bob, as a former Air Force officer myself, I am extremely troubled by the fact that the Air Force would tolerate that kind of micromanagement over specific air defense missions.
General Meyer, who was, I believe, at the time of 9/11, the head of NORAD, was quickly promoted to chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And so there has to be suspicion that he was in on the whole thing.
Yeah, the people in the key positions all got elevated and rewarded from 9/11. Even the head of the CIA, Bush made a big to-do at the CIA a few weeks later, you know, applauding them for their great work.
So, and the head of the FBI got the Medal of Freedom.
Yeah, yeah. So apparently, you know, they did do their job. The job was not the one that we would have liked them to have done, but it served the administration and their agenda perfectly. It was the catastrophic and catalyzing event that the Project for a New American Century laid out in their documents that was needed for the kind of reorganization that they and their agenda.
If that is true, Carol, it's like the Mein Kampf of the century. Bob, I mentioned that I had eaten meals at the World Trade Center, top of the world restaurant, before you came on. And I recalled I would take the table, especially on a Sunday brunch, a couple of times to sit at the outer ring where I could feel the building sway in the wind, which was designed to tolerate, of course, as I'm sure you know. And
right.
The sense I got from the floor swaying was it was like on being at the outer edge of a branch on a very strong oak or redwood tree.
Yeah.
You got this sense that to your left, inward, was very strong, you know, support, et cetera. Do you agree with all the analysis that the shafts of the building, the 47 central shafts, could not possibly have come down from the weight of a 757?
Right, absolutely.
Nor could the metal have been weakened by the burning of aviation fuel, jet fuel.
So let me ask you guys some other questions about this, too. Given that the people most responsible for the events of 9/11 have been, I think Rumsfeld has been ousted, right? But a lot of them were elevated in position. So what's going on within the military right now? Do you think that they will continue to go along with this extremely unpopular administration? Do you think they will rebel? There's news that not only were those nukes found on those planes, but there was also a plot to maybe paint some planes to look like UN planes and have them shot down over Iraq, you know, other false flag operations in order to expand the war into Iran. Now, what do you think is going on within the military now? Do you think there is division, dissension, or will be any?
Well, Bob may disagree with me, but I'll jump in with a little analysis, Carol. As I think Colonel Bowman would agree, you take the oath of office, and it says to follow the lawful orders of my designated superior, and an oath to support and protect the Constitution. And the Constitution clearly specifies the military is subject to the civilian political control, of the elected government. So it's very difficult for the military to say, well, just because we've got all these suspicions, we should fail to support this administration, no matter how criminal we might feel that it is. And it's once again, the military looks to Pelosi as Speaker of the House of Representatives and the House to invoke impeachment inquiry about any suspected wrongdoing, even if the president fails to pay his income tax. But now we've got, far more serious things to consider. Pelosi has failed her duty, her oath of office. It's tragic. I believe she's been bribed. I don't mind saying that publicly because her conduct is consistent with that, or intimidated, or both those things. But her conduct is despicable, and she has failed her duty for the military. So it's next impossible for the military, unless they, catch Bush in some kind of clear treason. Not that that hasn't occurred. So I think Bob would agree with me. The last thing I'll mention is that Admiral Fallon's going public in the Atlantic Monthly article, which is excellent, on why he thinks – I don't want to quote him unfairly – But he was candid about the realities about Iraq and Afghanistan and the misapplication of our forces and attention in Afghanistan. And he raised other questions as well. And I think he knew he was going to be asked to resign. He called Gates and said, get ready. I've made an interview here. I think that's Fallon speaking on behalf of lots of the active military at the senior leadership positions to indicate they were not going to engage in a false flag or a false war on Iran. Do you agree with me, Bob?
Oh, absolutely. I'd go further than that. I'd say that our oath of office in the military is to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and that includes a renegade president and vice president. And I believe that if the Cheney faction issues an order to nuke Iran, that the generals and admirals in the military have not only the right but the duty to refuse that order. And I suggested in a letter to the Pentagon a year and a day ago, a year and 2 days ago, as a matter of fact, that if such an order comes down, they not only must refuse that order, but they should consider whether the circumstances warrant they're arresting whoever gave the order as a war criminal.
I won't disagree with that, sir.
I just wonder how hard it is in the chain of command for people to refuse orders, like for the grunts on the ground to not kill or harass a civilian, and for the people at higher levels to turn a blind eye or not carry out an order, say nuking a city or something like that. Where don't we have also within the military in the last few years some unusual deaths? People who if they balk their commands, their lives are in danger, especially the ones who know too much. if they don't go along with this regime.
Perhaps. That's a lot of subjects there. The first is, Carol, you, I think Bob would agree with me, you are taught as a cadet or enlistee in the military to obey all lawful orders, you know, promptly and expeditiously and to fully carry them out. And the reason is that you're sometimes, in a, number one, you're dealing with lots of valuable things, airplanes, electronics, and tanks or whatever, and you're also dealing with your own life and other lives being at risk and the success of the mission. And the presumption is the mission is honorable and honest, but if you, if you're given an illegal order, you do not carry it out. But it's very difficult to know where you do that.
I'm afraid we have a break.
Another
again.
Break. Okay, I want to hear Bob's response to that. Bob, what do you say on legal orders, sir?
I will respond to that after the break.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thank you, Bob.
Uncover the Truth with Catherine Albright, live from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., Monday to Friday, right here on We the People Radio Network.
Well, hello, George. Yeah, the framers of our Constitution, fresh on the heels of revolution. But it must have seen the writing on the wall. They secured for us an open door in Article 2 and Section 4 to commence a presidential overhaul.
Hello, welcome back to Questioning War, Organizing Resistance. I'm your host, Carol Breyer, and we're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Robert Bowman and Michael Maxwell. And Bob, you are going to address how difficult it is for the military to obey illegal, unconstitutional, immoral orders.
Sure. Well, we have a very highly trained enlisted force. And for the most part, they will, whatever their orders are, and there are exceptions, that they'll be a small minority. But our officer corps is not only expected to be highly trained, highly educated. And this means that they have the responsibility and the duty to discern between legal and illegal orders. And it's the officer corps who will make the difference in determining whether they will order their troops to carry out orders. And I'm quite confident that the military will do the right thing, that by and large, the members of the military, for example, let's say that George W. Bush declared martial law, ordered that all of us dissidents be rounded up and put into Halliburton concentration camps, and tries to cancel the election. I'm quite confident that the military officers would take their troops, surround us citizens, point their guns outward and protect us from Blackwater, and that they would prevent the cancellation of the election. I just think that because the new Democratic Congress has been so lily-livered and so thought out and so ineffective that our last defense against the imperial presidency is the military. And I trust in them that the highly educated officer for the U.S. military will carry out their oath of office to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Well, I'm glad you have that confidence, but I must admit, you know, my uncle graduated from West Point. I got a cousin who graduated from West Point. My cousin joined the Air Force, and I have some familiarity with the military. And I have also heard that at the the Colorado Air Force Academy, there is part of it that are these hardcore Christians, and there's a lot of pressure on cadets to comply with this bizarre Christian sect that there is that element also, this Armageddon contingent within the military too, and that's what scares me. And they've been very high level as well. They've even spoken out publicly. I think one guy got canned for some of his remarks because he was.
Well, I think the higher ups in the Air Force beginning to take action against this lunatic fringe in the Air Force Academy that have instilled these fundamentalist Christian beliefs into the cadets. But you have to understand, a great majority of Air Force officers have come through ROTC, which means that they were educated not in West Point or the Air Force Academy, but at civilian universities. And they've gotten, in addition to their ROTC studies, they've gotten a well-rounded education. And it's these well-educated members of the military that we look to for leadership.
And the other thing that concerns me, too, is I think we actually have more mercenaries now in Iraq than we do regular soldiers. Isn't that true?
Well, actually, we have
more
contractor employees, and they're not all in the Blackwater, you know, security arrangement. There are a number, though. There are 160,000 contracting employees, I think of which 40,000 to 60,000 are in direct security role. I could be wrong on that number, but it's still an alarming number.
Probably doing laundry and chow hall service and things like that.
Exactly, and driving the trucks, the things that the Army should have been allowed to keep, but Cheney took those away from him, so so Halliburton could make a lot of money, which also is this pattern of corruption, by the way. Carol, we mustn't forget that 9/11 happened perhaps so the oil companies could have an opportunity to have our military go after where there's a lot of oil. It also, but very consistent with the facts, is that Cheney is making tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars personally as a principal stockholder in Halliburton
from the war. The other thing that concerns me is the reorganization or the privatization of the Army and also the outsourcing. Now, with privatization, they're getting mercenaries to do a lot of the dirty work, and they can't they outsource some of the dirty ops? Like, let's say, who do you think rigged those buildings with explosives? Do you think they had Americans do it, or do you think they had some foreign intelligence agency come in and do that job?
I think it was clearly foreign intelligence agents, operatives. That's my view. I'm not sure what Bob's view is.
Yeah, I simply don't know. That's one reason we need new investigation. We know somebody did it.
Yeah. And
we're back at you mentioned the outsourcing issue. Carol, U.S. military has been terribly weakened by the contracting and outsourcing that Cheney put in place when he was Secretary of Defense to enrich Halliburton and then himself. Drastically. Troops have not gotten supplies, meals and medical supplies and ammunition on time in Iraq because Halliburton drivers wouldn't drive down the road and couldn't be ordered to do so because they weren't military. So much of the government that the Bush-Cheney maladministration has wrecked or damaged.
I think Bob, you said it most succinctly about using the word treason. It strikes me that what this administration has done to the United States on just so many levels is simply treasonous.
Absolutely. Even before the Iraq War started, I said that if Cheney and Bush ahead with this war against Iraq, that it would be an impeachable offense, a war crime against the people of Iraq, and treason against the United States of America. And it certainly has turned out that way. We've lost over 4,000 of our finest, 30,000 of our injured soldiers. Their lives will never be the same. Tens of thousands of our young men and women have severe psychological problems because of what they've seen and what they have done. Hundreds of thousands are poisoned with depleted uranium and will suffer lives of pain and disability and will father thousands of children with severe birth defects. Our military services are depleted and paralyzed. The VA system is underfunded and overwhelmed. The National Guard and Reserve protect poor after poor. And for what? We have alienated our friends and made new enemies and created thousands of new recruits for Osama bin Laden.
I agree.
Well, I have a feeling that bin Laden is actually still, if he's still alive.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
The call is out across the land, the impeachment of Bush. For crimes and lies, you'd like to see him kicked out on his push. Friend, you've got good reason, I support you absolutely. But this impeachment season, don't forget your civic duty. Impeach Cheney first. It can still get worse.
Hello, welcome back to Questioning Wars, Organizing Resistance. I'm speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Bob Bowman and Michael Maxwell, and we were just discussing the treasonous and definitely impeachable behavior of this particular government and what are the remedies that we can do at this point in time. Bob, do you want to continue? You were cut off during the break.
Okay, well, first of all, of course, impeachment is the one remedy given to us by the Constitution to deal with an imperial presidency. But it's obvious that that isn't going to happen in spite of massive public demand because of the lily-livered Democrats who are sold out. So there are a couple of other ways. One is to have the military court-martial Cheney and Bush for abuse of duty as commander-in-chief and to have them indicted as war criminals.
And the military can do that?
See that done. I'm sorry?
The military can do that?
Yes, they can. We have gotten decisions of high-level military lawyers, and that is possible. It is possible for a commander-in-chief to be court-martialed.
Well,
that's an interesting possibility. I guess I would have to agree, Bob. In theory, yes. Perhaps even a certified military judge.
Yeah.
In the military justice system, Carol. They're separate judges, and there's
wow.
a separate court of military review for court-martial proceedings to be appealed to. So I guess they do have authority to issue. I don't know the details of how court-martial indictments are issued, but I gather it's from not just a judge advocate on a base having immediate jurisdiction, that I guess a military judge does so for a region or whatever. So perhaps the senior judges in Washington, D.C. and one of the services could have the courage to do that.
Now, if that happened, who would replace Cheney and Bush? Would it go through the regular?
Very tragically, Ms. Pelosi, but for only a brief period, let us hope.
Ah, okay. But it would be, in some ways, like a preemptive move to avoid, say, the expansion of the war against Russia or against Iran. Yeah.
Well,
right.
Yeah, it could be seen as that too, but more immediately it would be instituting a judicial procedure under the part of the Constitution that designates the military to conduct its own judicial activities, and then the implementing legislation and related case authority, as Bob makes reference to. So it'd be interesting, perhaps, Bob, you know, some colonel military judge in one of the services could say, I find cause in here to bring an indictment against W and Cheney simultaneously. Absolutely. You might even throw Rumsfeld in the same mixture, too. That might be overstretching things. But that would be a very interesting approach, especially if one was concerned about those two trying to take over the government under the Emergency Powers Act.
Well,
right.
that's another thing
we've been working on.
Yeah, who knows exactly? DeFazio was trying to. He's on the Homeland Security Committee, and he wasn't able to find out what the COG plans were. Except it seems Peter Dale Scott just spoke recently, and he seems to think that the COG plans were developed by Rumsfeld and Cheney when they were not in elected positions, and that they decided that it would be easier to run the country without Congress butting in, so they eliminated Congress in their COG plans so that they wouldn't interfere.
Right. That's my understanding.
So if they were court-martialed, then they wouldn't be able to implement their own. And the question is, too, we're still in a state
Absolutely.
Of emergency. Is the country being run by a shadow government and the current Congress just a dog and pony show?
The answer is possibly, because they can bury stuff in appropriations. And compartmentalize it, as Bob would probably agree. And then they can also do stuff by, you know, secret executive order.
Yeah.
So right
That's
now,
right,
right now, the country is being run basically by the executive branch, and what Congress is saying or doing really has very little effect on what's happening.
Well, I'm not sure this would go at that point to say that's clearly and obviously true, Carol. It's certainly a concern that there's a threshold at which they can't show their hands. And they don't have to basically steal from all of us, conduct an imperial government, and abuse and misuse the bulk of our
there's
military.
There's also another thing to consider, and that's that it's not just the executive branch. I believe that at the moment, the upper hand is being held not by Cheney and his faction, but by Zbigniew Brzezinski, Gates, and a small number of other folks who are essentially running the government, commanding the military and the CIA, and ignoring Cheney and his band of neocons. And there's good news and bad news in that. The good news is that it makes it less likely that we're going to get into a war against Iran. The bad news is that the Brzezinski faction of the Council on Foreign Relations and Trilateral Commission seems to be very hawkish when it comes to Russia and China. And in the future, it could bode ill for our relations with those very powerful countries.
That's pretty heavy. Analysis.
And then, I'll just throw in, I've known John McCain for more than 20 years periodically. I used to really respect him, and I still like him. But the man is just, he's become a Hindenburg, an addled Hindenburg. And Miss Palin again, the theory that Bob just put forward, it could well be that Miss Palin is the puppet that secret dark forces have decided can somehow possibly become president, and they can manipulate her.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've talked to McCain personally as well. I believe he has PTSD, and he should be in treatment, not in the White House.
I think I have to agree with you. With the strongest of reluctance, it's really sad and tragic.
Yeah.
And it could be more tragic for the country if he's elected.
Yeah. Now, we've touched on a handful of topics tonight. There are many, many more. I'd like to direct people to our website, thepatriots.us, and you can see many, many more issues there and an in-depth treatment of our analysis of the relationship between the military and a potential attack on Iran. So if people want to go to thepatriots.us, you can get a lot more.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us this evening and for your tireless efforts, Bob, for these many decades just educating the people and standing up for the Constitution of what's right. And tell me, I know you almost won your bid for congressional office.
Right.
Do you have any idea whether it was the electronic voting machines that made or broke that election?
Oh, I absolutely believe so. Exit polls suggested that I may have won that election by 12 points.
Wow.
But electronic voting machines gave it to the 7-term incumbent Republican.
Oh, dear. Oh.
Listen, keep up the good fight, Bob.
Yes.
Thanks.
You're
yes,
a great American.
I have to leave to get back to my other event that I'm supposed to do.
Online and on demand, this is We the People Radio Network.
Mr. President, I wish to document that you have clearly lost your mind. Ever since the towers fell, you drove our soldiers straight through hell and left a trail of blood and tears behind. Mr. President, you were not heaven sent, and God's not standing by your side. He's keeping track of all the dead, every hair on every victim's head. Their blood is on your hands and you can't.
Hello, welcome back to Questioning War, Organizing Resistance. And we were really lucky to have Bob Bowman join us, but he was also at a dinner party, so he had to get back to his dinner party. But if you missed it just when he was going on break, according to the exit polls, he probably should have won his election, his bid for Congress in 2006 by 12 points. And he also suspects the electronic voting machines. And I have to mention, I think Cynthia McKinney also probably should have been in Congress, too. And I believe that the electronic voting machines had something to do with her being ousted from Congress. That and the fact that she was the most courageous congresswoman speaking out for impeachment and questioning the official story of 9/11. So that's another factor that we have to put into the equation when we are challenging the powers that be and working for systemic change. Michael,
yes.
We also have a caller from Texas. Kevin, did you have a question or a comment?
Oh, I just was trying to. I was driving in, and we have you playing on the micro here in Austin, and I was going to try to catch Colonel Bowman, just a real American hero. So much respect to him, but I have a feeling and I know for a fact that there's lots of good colonels out there that wouldn't play ball and wouldn't go along and didn't join the CFR, and they didn't get stars over it. But I wanted to go back to something you folks were speaking about earlier. It is continuity of government. I mean, we went into continuity of government, I believe, the day after 9/11, and I haven't heard them say they took it back.
And they've been renewing it. They just renewed it again. Every year they have to renew it.
And Bush actually quoted, he said shadow government at that time. And so when Congress seems to pitch a minor fight every once in a while over a little, some petty issue, and, you know, Bush signs off on all these bills, but then he signs a signing statement saying, well, I signed it, but I'm not going to do it. And if I do it, I'm going to do it this way. So, I mean, it's out there for everybody to see. You've got, I don't know who your guest is. What's his name?
Michael Maxwell, and I've been a military officer in both Secretary of Defense's office and from the White House and several administrations at periodic times.
Mr. Maxwell, you spoke about it. You said Gates. You said Brzezinski. Now, you know, that to me indicates that Obama's team with Brzezinski, even though there's Brzezinski's working for McCain, that foreign policy seems to be already put in place. And when you talk about Gates and Brzezinski, you're talking about the founders of al-Qaeda. And, of course, they're going to be there to guard the situation. And I just I really don't know. I mean, I'm kind of out of the I hate to call it the Patriot movement because it seems like it's got a lot of baggage, or the Truth movement, and I've watched it disintegrate and fracture and infight. And I'm just kind of at a loss. I mean, we were really excited about the Ron Paul thing. None of us, I think, that really knew were naive enough to think they'd let him have it. But I think it was a good learning tool to watch people – you know, for people to understand how rigged the system is and how fixed the game is. We did a straw poll in Texas, in Fort Worth, just over a year ago, September 1st, and out of the 2,000 people, I think three people voted for John McCain. I mean, it was a laughingstock.
In the primary? You're saying in the previous primary?
The straw poll, when we, you know,
okay,
a big Republican functionary.
Was it in advance of him winning a Texas primary?
Oh, yes, yeah, it was September 1st. Duncan Hunter was the one that came out on top, and we did an exit poll, and we came out with 24% respondent rate, which is pretty high, you know, a quarter of the people. And we came up with, you know, Ron Paul having about 31% of the vote. They said he got 16 point something or other, but we could see them rig it there. But I'm kind of at a loss. I don't know who to, you know, root for. I think Obama's dangerous because there's a certain percentage of the population that'll go to sleep with him in. But then again, he's got a more dangerous agenda to me. I mean, his is direct confrontation with Russia, you know, not going through surrogates or puppets like the neocons have done. But
actually, I understand your concern, and I can appreciate, you know, a thoughtful reasons for it. But I've done the diligence thing, if you will. I've both read Obama's books, and I've talked to two friends of mine who coincidentally have known him 15 and 20 years, respectively.
That's got to be a record.
Okay? No, actually, and they think highly of him, and they're not ultra-liberal by any means. One guy's a registered Republican, last time I checked with him, although he is distressed as hell at the current administration's corruption. But both of them said Obama is a straight shooter, that the guy is actually a very thoughtful, deliberative decision maker, and that he didn't get to be editor of the Harvard Law Review without having a pretty substantial brain, significant, capable brain. And so he's also got the history of the U.S. reflected in all those judicial opinions for the last 200 plus years. And my view is that I know John McCain. As I mentioned earlier in the program, I've known him off and on for 20 years. I participated in the Commission Against Government Waste activities with him, and I had the highest respect for him. I also volunteered and worked my heart out for him in the 2000 primary campaign. I had lunch with him more than multiple times. This is not the John McCain I knew in 2000. This man is not only more than 8 years older, he looks 20 years older. He's inconsistent about commitments he made to good government and being a Teddy Roosevelt-style president. And as Colonel Bowman mentioned earlier, he thinks he's got PTSD. And, in fact, one fellow who was in the Hanoi Hilton, they also don't understand McCain's behavior presently either. I will tell you, as a former senior military officer myself, his selection of Ms. Palin is an act of dereliction of duty towards the country, and the John McCain I knew in 2000 wouldn't have considered it for a minute.
Well, that decision was above his pay grade.
I think you're right.
Sure.
But he didn't have to go along with it. He could have said, hey, I'm picking guys I have confidence in. Or he could have said, I understand, management wants Mitt Romney. And he could have just, the McCain I knew would not have held grudges against Romney.
Well, you know, Mr. Maxwell, I have to say that when I watched the primary process, it was who's going to be the loser? The Republicans are trying to fill the loser. Who's going to lay down to Hillary Clinton? It looked pretty sure it was going to be Hillary Clinton for the longest time, and I don't know if they thought we couldn't stomach another Bush-Clinton administration or regime, and they decided to shift gears or do a color revolution is what it looks like to me. You know, women fainting on the front row, the same little thing. That it's just it's such a fraud at this point, and it's such a circus and a hollow shell that, you know, I think the smart people are the ones that say, you know, it's a rigged game. We can't do anything about it. But we've got to keep fighting. And I just don't know. I'm really at a loss. I mean, you know, I organized the C-SPAN airing of our 9/11 conference we did out in L.A. I did the Hustler article on 9/11. I've done so many things, and I thought for a time we were really getting somewhere with 9/11 as a thing that I told the left, you know, and I participated last 4th of July in Philadelphia in Independence Hall, where I was the only conservative there, a paleo conservative with a huge group of peace action people and anti-war people, and I really read them the Riot Act and got to introduce the We Are Change kids, Luke Radowski, as being effective tools on how to really combat these guys. And, you know, that association between 9/11 and the anti-war movement lasted about a month and a week, maybe, before it all fell apart. And, you know, I said, you're trying to treat a sickness, but I've got a cure, and it's 9/11. It's a 9/11 truth.
No, you're absolutely correct. And
Kevin, things are different here on the West Coast, but I think we do have to keep trying, and we can't give up. There's also, we're almost out of time. There's another person.
Well, I want to give Kevin, if I could, one bit of encouragement. Kevin, Carol and I attended an item in Oakland. And last week we were very convinced that 9/11 could really open up the issue of the government's integrity. So I would not give up on demanding a 9/11 complete investigation, sir.
There's a tremendous amount of things that are going on right now within the movement, and maybe not in Texas, but in other parts of the world. But Jerry, do you want to? You have like a minute to throw out what you wanted to bring up too.
All right, ready?
Yes. Quick.
Understand, gentlemen, the difference between civil rights and civil liberties. Civil liberties is the Bill of Rights. Civil rights is the 14th Amendment.
Mm.
And the military still has to protect civil liberties under Corfield versus Coryell, the original Privileges and Immunities Clause. If you want civil liberties back, see an attorney. Get a sufficient statement, get free of it, and get your civil liberties, God-given rights back. Good night, all. God bless.
Hey, Carol, let me throw this out there real quick.
Sure.
Carol, can you look into the use of the Predator drones in the Galveston, Houston area right now? They're using them to help with a rescue effort. So if you guys could look into that, that's a spooky thing they said they were going to use on the border. Of course, now they brought them inland. You guys keep up the fight. Keep up the good work.
You do the same thing.
I'll check it out. If you can email me something about it, that would be great, too. And thank you for joining us. Thank you, Michael, for sharing your insights and
your
experience.
Happy to do so, Carol.
And I think we can't give up. Never give up.
Well, you're a great, courageous lady. You keep up the great work, too, please.
I will. Thanks so much. Good night, everyone.